evening, everybody. Mike Malloy here. Thanks for tuning in, hanging out. We do appreciate it. Stick around tonight. We'll try to lure a couple of right-wing morons into exposing themselves. I got an email from Michael here who he says, here's a train of thought you might enjoy. If Dick Cheney dies before Pastor Fred Phelps does, or even after for that matter, will Phelps and or the rest of the Westboro Baptist Church picket at Cheney's funeral since his daughter is a lesbian? I'd like to see them try to get away with that one. And is there any group organizing to picket Pastor Phelps' funeral when he finally kicks the bucket? And what would those signs say? That's a good question, Michael. I don't have a clue. Don't have a clue. I want to play a little piece of sound for you here. And I want you Republicans who listen to this, you right-wing fools who listen to this program, trying desperately to get some kind of education going in your head, some kind of truth, some kind of awareness. It's hopeless. Your brain is full of Swiss cheese and Glenn Beck, but I repeat myself. But I want you to listen to this. Your fellow Republicans in the Senate who want homeless veterans' families to stay homeless. You might say those patriotic Republicans are at it again. Yes, they are, by God. This morning, Senator Patty Murray spoke on the floor. She's from Washington State. And she requested unanimous consent to pass a bill called the Homeless Women Veterans and Homeless Veterans with Children Act. Mitch McConnell, the senator from Kentucky, and Tom Coburn, where's he from? Where's Coburn from? Oklahoma? Is he? Mitch McConnell, on behalf of Tom Coburn, objected to the Homeless Women Veterans and Homeless Veterans with Children Act. I want you to listen to this. The first voice is Patty Murray's, and then you hear Mitch McConnell, and then Patty Murray again.
About S-1237, which is the Homeless Veterans and Other Veterans Health Care Authorities Act of 2010, an extremely important and timely bill that will help many women, women with children, and men with children today who served our country come home and do not have the support and services they need and end up homeless on our streets. So I come to the Senate floor today to urge our colleagues to pass this bill quickly, and I ask unanimous consent the Senate proceed to the immediate consideration of calendar number 360 S-1237. The Homeless Veterans and Other Veterans Health Care Authorities Act.
Is there objection?
Madam President, reserving the right to object, and I will have to object on behalf of my colleague, Senator Coburn from Oklahoma. He has concerns about this legislation, particularly as he indicates in a letter that I'll ask consent to appear in the record that it be paid for up front so the promises it makes to veterans are in fact kept. So, Madam President, I object.
I just want to say that this is such an important bill. We had an amazing woman come and visit last week. Her name's Natalie, and she has two young children. She's living in Issaquah, my home state of Washington, and she's been through some really tough times. She is a Navy veteran. She's a single mom, but she came home from serving our country and ended up without a place to live for her and her two young children on the street. She, like any mom, wanted to do everything she could to take care of her kids and provide them the kind of quality of life that every one of us does. But she couldn't find stable job or income and ended up on the street. This is an extremely important piece of legislation, had bipartisan support coming out of our committee. I will keep coming to the floor to ask for unanimous consent on this because I can't go home and look at someone who served our country with distinction and honor who today is living on the street because the Senate is objecting.
Well, the Senate's not objecting, Senator Murray. It's these filthy, rancid, gutless, cowardly Republicans. Republicans who, under the guise of fiscal responsibility, Republicans who never in their lives would consider going to off to fight for corporate America, these Republicans who first of all, created an economic situation where people are forced into the military just to make a few bucks and get some health care. These same Republicans now, when the vets come home, they say, nah, to hell with you. We used you. We don't want you anymore. I hate these people so much. I wish there could be a plague, something like the Black Death from medieval times, the Dark Ages, I should say, and that only people who voted Republican would get bitten by the flea. This country would be so much cleaner if every single conservative, every single Republican, every single right-wing geek would just vanish. Why don't y'all rapture on up to hell and get it over with, huh? Oh, don't want to vote for aid for veterans? Let the bastards be homeless. Who cares? Right, Mitch? When did you serve in the military, Mitch? How about you, Coburn? How about the rest of you right-wing cowards? Huh? You, mister, listening to this program, when did you ever serve your country, you punk? I just get so angry. Okay, deep breath. We have a missive from Prairie 2, our economic affairs correspondent. Interestingly, today, or this evening, it is being reported by the always right New York Times that stocks fell sharply today as a steep decline in consumer confidence aggravated growing concern about the global economy and sent the Standard & Poor's 500 stock index to a new low for the year. Oh, no! Stocks fell from the start, continuing a trend that had begun overnight in Asia and spread to Europe, driving major indices in the United States down about 3%. The Conference Board, and Prairie 2 will explain to you what that is in a moment, the Conference Board said today that its Consumer Confidence Index fell this month to 52.9, a decline of nearly 10 points. Now, don't ask me where it normally resides. I have no idea. I'm just telling you that it fell by 10 points. Woo! Stocks in Shanghai set off the decline after the Conference Board, a private research group, said it had recalculated its leading economic index for China. And in recalculating its economic index for China, it discovered, there's not going to be any growth in China. Well, that set off the capitalist swine who immediately started dumping their stocks. Oh, let somebody else buy. Oh, let me out of here. Let me go to Goldline. Let me go buy gold. Ah, let me have. You know how they behave. So anyway, everything fell. Everything went down. The Dow ended down 268.22 points or 2.65%. It's all the way down to 9,870 now. Let's hope it goes down to 1,200. Okay? And then the Republicans can come in and take over. And they can put all that Social Security money into the stock market. Yeah! Or not. So anyway, as soon as we come back from the break, now keep that in mind about what I just shared with you from New York Times. And we will have Prairie 2's evaluation of all that nonsense when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. In my dreams, I have a plan. If I got me a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work at all. I'd fool around and have a ball. Money, money, money. Must be funny in the rich man's world.
mentioned yet tonight how much he hates these people. It's more Mike Malloy.
You know, I just can't get over that that attempt by Patty Murray to get a bill in for unanimous consent to get it to the floor and vote on it to take care of absolutely desperate veterans. You hear these stories all day long. I don't know if you hear them, but I hear them all the time, especially here in Georgia. Georgia has had, I think, the most bank failures of any state in the union. We also have about seven or eight massive military bases in the state. And so here in Georgia, we hear about this all the time. Instance after instance of people getting out of the military, men and women, married and single, with or without children, who come home, they can't get a job. The way the benefits are set up, they either have to wait forever or they now are carrying with them some kind of physical disability as a result of their service or emotional instability. And they're losing their homes. They're losing their God. Almost. They're losing their homes. And Republicans today made it clear. Now, I hope anybody who still votes, not that it matters anymore, but not about voting, I guess. This is about when the lights go out, who to target for a good ass kicking. Every time the Republicans, whether it is this Joe Barton or Burton, what was his name? Barton, this freak from Texas who apologized to BP, or Mitch McConnell and Tom Coburn, who refused to allow a vote to be taken, on whether or not to take care of veterans. I swear to God, the best treatment for Republicans is put these pigs into standard combat gear, give them a weapon, and drop their useless asses somewhere on the plains of Afghanistan or in downtown Baghdad. And just let them sink or swim. I can't. It's very difficult for me to get this, and move on to the next topic. But I'll try. Prairie 2 writes, the often quoted conference board that was quoted by the New York Times issued two huge pieces of news today. Their U.S. Consumer Confidence Index plunged by a huge amount for last month, and the conference board has revised their index of leading economic indicators in China down for April to near zero from the significant growth they had reported earlier. They blamed a calculation error. The nearly 100-year-old conference board is a nonprofit research group whose members and funding come from the executives of 1,500 of the world's biggest corporations. Keep in mind, these aren't real numbers, but an index that is supposed to divine the direction of the real numbers are moving in. Is this insight or just propaganda intended to push everything in the direction these masters of the universe want it to go? Either way, they do reflect what is happening. You can tell which way the sheep are going by just watching the dog. Critics are pointing out that these China numbers are already 4 months old, and China doesn't seem to be doing that badly. How China will react is not yet known. They really don't like to be pushed around and already resent pressure to adjust the value of their money relative to the U.S. dollar, and may use this slight as an excuse to not cooperate. This could be a good thing for conference board members who have their interests at heart and not yours. The news pushed world markets down sharply by as much or more than 3% in the U.S. and 4% in Shanghai. It also drove down interest on U.S. Treasury bonds as panicked investors are paying a premium to buy them. If this holds, it translates into lower home mortgage rates and lower interest on the trillions in U.S. government debt. Of course, nobody can get a mortgage, so what does the rate matter? If you had high hopes for the new Volcker rule to crack down the gambling done by the big banks, not so fast. The banks will, in theory, be restricted to using only 4% of their cash to own hedge funds and such, starting 18 months after the law takes effect. But banks could be granted exemptions on divesting their current holdings until 2022. This will disguise the value of the worthless junk on their books until the current officers have retired to Jamaica. Of course, that assumes the Volcker rule even becomes law and that we can get through the next 18 months after that, because by then it will be the start of President Palin's first term. So none of this probably matters anyway. PrairieNumeral2.com. Unbelievable stuff. Unbelievable stuff. You know, and I still get emails. I got a spate of emails from some freaks today who don't understand. These people that talk about the Constitution. Oh, well, when did we get away from the Constitution? It's when that socialist Theodore or Franklin Roosevelt started this and started that. Of course, the socialist Franklin Roosevelt started it, too. I mean, whatever. But the thing that intrigues me is how glassy-eyed asinine these right-wingers are. You know, somehow somebody includes me in these chain mails that go back and forth between these freaks. It's kind of like being on a daisy chain and I just wish they would leave me alone because they display their ignorance. I made reference. I actually answered one of them, this freak that was telling me about the Constitution. Get back to the Constitution. I pointed out that at the time the Constitution was written, well, not the Constitution, but one of the constitutional conventions, black folk were considered to be 3/5 of a human being and women couldn't vote. And of course, they immediately got everybody on this little group got all flustered like, oh, he doesn't know the Constitution. What's he talking about? Jesus, God, leave me off, you little circle jerks. Will you? Thank you. We'll be right back.
Listening to Mike Malloy. Turn down your speakers. It'll be our secret.
The confirmation hearings for General David Petraeus, the fainter, to be top military commander in Afghanistan were held today. I guess they're finished. I mean, it just seems like a waste of time. What's somebody going to do? Challenge him? Gareth Porter has a piece at ipsnews.net. No, not there. Yeah, there. Entitled, Why Petraeus Won't Salvage This War. And a couple of quotes here. Porter writes, as General David Petraeus prepares for his next command, his supporters are hoping he can rescue a failing war for the second time in just a few years. But both the dire state of the war effort in Afghanistan and his approach to taking command in Iraq in early 2007 suggests that Petraeus will not try to replicate an apparent and temporary success that he knows was at least in part the result of fortuitous circumstances in Iraq. Instead, he will maneuver to avoid having to go down with what increasingly appears to be a failed counterinsurgency war. Petraeus must be acutely aware that the war plan, which he approved in 2009, has not worked. Early this month, he received Stanley McChrystal's last classified assessment of the war, reported in detail in The Independent this past Sunday. That assessment showed that no clear progress had been made since the U.S. offensive began in February, and none was expected for at least the next 6 months. Petraeus is not going to pledge in his confirmation hearings to achieve in 18 months what McChrystal has said cannot be achieved in the next 6 months. Pro-war Republicans, led by John McCain, are hoping that Petraeus will now insist that the July 2011 time frame be eliminated, creating an open-ended commitment to a high and perhaps even rising U.S. level of U.S. military presence in Afghanistan, end quote. Another reason the surge seemed to work in Iraq, of course, was because you and I and the Chinese contributed billions of dollars to buy off Sunni insurgents who did not want to be any part of the Shia. any kind of a Shia-dominated country whatsoever. So you and I and the Chinese spent billions upon billions upon billions of dollars, plus consider all the billions upon billions upon billions that were stolen. So the peace, quote-quote, in Iraq is worse than an illusion. It's more like a drug-induced nightmare. Joe in Temecula, California, writes, Mike, you asked rhetorically last night what will happen, what's going to happen with regard to our ever-deteriorating economy. You then shuddered because you didn't want to think about it, and I, for one, don't blame you. Personally, my theory is that there is going to be another world war of some type that will dwarf even the body counts of WW1 and WW2. I don't know how it will start, possibly with Iran or perhaps over Taiwan, but one lesson I have learned from history is when economies get so bad and young people sit idle, the ruling elite get very nervous. Instead of being real leaders and finding real solutions to the problems, they instead take the easy way out. War! What better way to occupy the minds of people who would otherwise be in a state of angst with regard to their economic state? Fear about economics can easily be replaced with hatred of something or someone to blame for the current state of affairs. If we start seeing 30% unemployment in the U.S. and Europe, I think these G20 blokes would just assume that everyone should have a rifle and have them start shooting at each other rather than try to create jobs. Of course, the biggest fear would be some sort of nuclear war, but I don't think that will happen. It destroys too many resources the corporations still want and need. Instead, I think it will just be massive bloodshed the likes not seen since WW2. How soon we forget that millions died in World War I and World War II. My fear is that we will soon remember what that's like again. You know, I wonder why our illustrious President Obama has not taken the economic problem in this country by the throat. I mean, even I could do this. You could do this, okay? The infrastructure of the country is collapsing. By infrastructure, I mean sewage systems in big cities. Roads, interstate highways, secondary roads, the so-called blue highways, bridges are falling apart, schools, some schools you wouldn't send your children to, dams, some of the dams are starting to show deterioration to the point that it becomes dangerous, highway roadbeds, railroad roadbeds, I mean, it just goes on and on. This country is deteriorating. It's, I call it deferred maintenance, like the real estate agents do. Call it whatever you want to call it. But I mean, drive down any highway, go to any city, call the water departments in metropolitan areas and ask them how their sewage, you know, the sewage system that exists in Atlanta was built shortly after shortly before World War I. And various areas in Atlanta inside the city have these massive sinkholes. They have huge pipes burst. I mean, it's incredible. But Mr. Obama doesn't do this. I don't get this. Start the projects, kind of like the old WPA from before you and I were born. Well, some of you were born then. Works Project Administration, or whatever it was called. And, you know, the right-wingers, of course, peed all over it. They thought it was just socialism, socialism! What they wanted was World War II, which they eventually got. But just start something like that. And just begin the project, tell the Federal Reserve to print money, send the money out to pay for it, deduct payroll taxes, deduct Social Security, deduct income tax, get the circulation of money flowing back through the communities. People will go to work. All of a sudden, people get pride in themselves. They see that they're not going to lose their house. They are going to be able to send their kid to two-year colleges. They are going to be able to pay off their truck payment or whatever it is. But nothing happens except this GD war. I don't understand this. You know, I hear people say, well, give Obama a time or a chance or whatever. And what do I hear regarding the war and the economy? I hear exactly the wrong stuff. It seems like every single economist in the country keeps warning, do something! Start working on these public projects. Cut the funding to the damn war. Now, if we lived in a country where the concerns of our people were paramount, that is what would happen. But remember, we live in a capitalist society that is literally out of control. Capitalism wants profit. It wants the flow of capital, even phony capital. It doesn't care. It wants death. It wants destruction. Because the new element, of course, is disaster capitalism. At least it's been named now. It's not new, but at least it's been named disaster capitalism. But I wish I could understand in my very limited education why President Bojica does not begin a works project administration like government agency and start money flowing back into the hands of working people. And I guess the quick answer is that he dare not, because they'll show him the Zapruder film again. What other explanation is there? Is Barack Obama a moron? No, he's not. Is he a corporate toad? One would hope not. What does that leave? Fear on his part? Is he a warmonger on the same level as George W. Bush? It kind of appears that way. I mean, you don't want to believe that, but, you know, what are you going to believe? The you know, what they say or what your lying eyes keep showing you? Huh? Which way are you going to go? I do not understand it. And I wish somebody would maybe pray to, or Michael and Roswell, or one of you people would explain to me why President Bojica doesn't do what I just suggested. We'll be right back.
Primal Scream, You Suppress, Embrace Your Inner Liberal Warrior with Mike Malloy.
Yeah, do that. It's 10 before the hour. I got an email today from Cynthia in San Jose, California. It's kind of personal, but I want to share it with you. In light of what Patty Murray tried to get done today and the response by this piece of filth from Oklahoma and the other piece of filth from Kentucky. Mike, I hate Republicans because they love to throw people away, because they are so worried that a poor person might get some scrap of food to survive or a miserable broken down place to live out of the weather. They think all poor people are lazy and worthless and should go away and die somewhere out of sight. Well, my brother did. I wrote to you about him over the Memorial Day weekend as he died on May 30th. I don't know if you saw that email, but my brother was a Vietnam vet, a conscientious objector who did not carry a gun, but instead carried a medical kit. He was a battlefield medic, and he won 3 Bronze Stars, 2 Purple Hearts, and a 4th medal for bravery under fire that he never bothered to retrieve. In one nighttime attack on his unit's position, though, he ignored his own safety and got up out of his foxhole, exposing himself to mortar explosions and machine gun fire, to run from foxhole to patch up his wounded buddies who were getting creamed when mortar shells blew up in or near their foxholes. My brother was credited with saving the lives of perhaps 8 to 12 men that night while getting injured himself from a mortar explosion. He ended up with shrapnel deep in his face, too deep to remove, and he carried it for the rest of his life. When he was called, my brother did his duty and put it all on the line for his country. But when push came to shove, throughout his life, this country was not there for him. He worked hard, did his best for every employer he worked for, and was rewarded with being laid off whenever management needed to squeeze more profit. The last company he worked for laid him off in May 2002 when they sent his job offshore. And they made him train his foreign replacement before they fired him. He never found a good job again and was reduced pretty much to poverty from that point on. And so in the early morning hours of May 30th, 2010, when he wasn't feeling well, he drove himself to the hospital where he was given a bunch of tests. But I gather they didn't bother giving him an EKG, which, I don't know, might have told the doctors what was wrong with him, and maybe they might have saved his life. I don't know. But he was a nobody, a no one. And you don't waste expensive tests on a no one, right? And he died, apparently from a burst artery in his heart. He was 63. They didn't do an autopsy, though, and so do they really know it killed him? Do they even care? I care. He was my brother. And then I think of this piece of crap Cheney, who just went to the hospital when he wasn't feeling well, the draft-dodging piece of crap, who had other things to do when the country called. He was sure happy to see people like my brother go to Vietnam, but he couldn't be bothered himself. Cheney was, after all, too important. And so when Cheney went to the hospital the other day, do you think they pulled out all the stops to give him every test under the sun? I bet Cheney was strapped to an EKG machine the whole time. I'm telling you, Mike, there cannot be enough Cheneys in this universe to equal my one brother. I wish so bad I could have my brother back. You can't imagine. But to Republicans, my brother was nothing, a no one, a pawn to send to war, and then trash to throw away. I hate them. Cynthia. Imagine, Truth Seeker, how many times a similar story could be told about somebody who was forced back then to go fight for corporate America, to go kill innocent people. And after we were defeated, came back to the United States and was treated by Republicans as if he, for the most part, he's, or occasional she in Vietnam, didn't exist. But this is what Republicans do. Every single Republican on earth is a coward, is a filthy coward. That's first and foremost. They're afraid of everything. They hunt in packs. They're like predators. You take them out one at a time, and they just pee their pants. They just, Mike, I don't know if you heard about this, but I'll share it anyway. I heard it during an insomnia session listening to Bill Press. In order to fund his ridiculous rally at the Lincoln Memorial, Glenn Beck is seeking donations from his pathetic fans. The donations are to be given to an organization by the name of the Special Operations Warrior Foundation, which purportedly helps, quote, the families of these service members are taken care of in the event of an accident or loss of life, end quote. When you click and go to the online donation page and scroll to the bottom, there's a disclosure that reads as follows, quote, all contributions made to the Special Operations Warrior Foundation will first be applied to the costs of the Restoring Honor Rally taking place on August 28, 2010. All contributions in excess of these costs will then be retained by the Special Operations Warrior Foundation. End quote. So here's this pig, Glenn Beck, pulling a Sean Hannity by using the plight of our troops to fund his crappy rally, swarming with subhumans so blankety-blank stupid that they probably gave money to this unpatriotic sham. It's been coming on for a long time, but tonight I really hate this slime ball. George in Phoenix. Yeah, Beck took a look at all the money that Hannity has stolen from the families of dead or grievously wounded veterans. And Beck, being the good little manipulator that he is, he just thought to himself, gee, why don't I do this? And I can really apply to the racist streak in this country by making people think it's an answer to the I Have a Dream rally by Dr. King 60 years ago or whenever it was. Send me your money, you stupid sheep. Send me your money. The Special Operations Warrior Fund, my ass. This is the Malloy program. I got an email here from William in Hollywood. Subject line, what should happen. All these SOB called corporations that the soldiers risk their lives for, after all, it was the corporations who brought on these wars to fill their pockets. So since that is the case, then the Congress should take the money needed for the soldiers who have nothing at all, not even a home, which is criminal, take the money from the corporations who made huge profits. The Christmas before last, I was taking out the trash in our area where the assorted cans sit. At the gate to the container in which they all sit that faces a street just a few feet past the sidewalk, I saw a young man with a typical military haircut, and he had built a temporary roof and floor out of cardboard and a tossed out wooden cabinet sitting there. I offered help, like sleep on our couch, but he said, no, I can't. So all I could thing to do was to bring him a plate of our home-cooked turkey meal and a few beers and handed that to him. I didn't push it or say anything more. I could tell he was not in the taking mood, but he did eat the food and was gone the next day. He removed all traces of his temporary hut. In an odd way, I felt I did a good thing, and at the same time, I felt like I was feeding an abandoned animal. An animal used and discarded by our corporate-owned blanking government and military-industrial complex. You can turn on the television at any time and see ads to help feed and give homes to abandoned pets, but never see one damn ad on this situation. No one talks about this as if it doesn't exist. William. Yeah, that's an excellent yet very depressing point, isn't it? How many times do you see those those institutional ads or requests for assistance, and bless their heart, you know, for mistreated animals. I mean, I think anyone who mistreats an animal is just scum. Disgusting. Subhuman. But at the same time, why are there never ads? As William pointed out, what would happen if Vote Vets or After Downing Street has changed its name now, I think. But what would happen if one of those organizations would put together a television ad similar to the ones used to help abandoned, injured, mistreated house pets? What would happen? Well, Thinkin writes, hey, I just listened to that story of that combat medic written by his sister. The combat medics were aimed at deliberately by the enemy because by killing them, more Americans would die since the medic wouldn't be there to save the wounded. They were extremely brave. Meanwhile, here's a comment I made a few minutes ago in my rant blog about Chicken Hawk Sessions and his treatment of Kagan today. Quote, apparently Jeff Sessions lambasted the current Supreme Court nominee Elena Kagan for her attitude toward the military today. But where does Jefferson Beauregard T. Cornpone Sessions III come off with his Chicken Hawk attitude toward military issues as though he's some sort of military expert? Sessions avoided the draft by going to college. While a patriotic friend of mine, born about the same year from Little Rock, Arkansas, volunteered for the Army straight out of high school and served in Army Intel in Vietnam, then went back to college at University of Arkansas. Unlike Mr. Draped in the Flag Sessions, who rushed into the arms of college life as fast as he could after high school to escape combat. Sessions has exactly zero combat experience, but he's all about Chicken Hawk attitudes toward military issues, ready to send troops into battles he himself avoided. His military service came from joining the Army Reserves after getting his JD at University of Alabama months after the draft officially ended, when he was safe from having to go into a combat zone. Did Sessions go overseas to Vietnam in his fading months? Heck no, he didn't. My friends of his age group who served mostly had to go into Vietnam itself. Is it necessary to have served in combat to be a politician or senator in our civilian-led democracy? Of course not. But one should not be chastising others for not being reverent enough on military matters or promoting wars and battles when one deliberately avoided service by going to college until the draft ended, then joined when one could pick what branch he wanted to serve in, as Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III did. Well, yeah, it just confirms again and again and again. I mean, every single, with one or two exceptions, you have the war criminal John McCain, and then you have, I think maybe one or two other, Republican senators who might have seen any kind of, military service at all, much less combat. But they're the ones who insist that everybody else should serve it. If you don't, you're some kind of I don't know, you're dissing the military. What Elena Kagan, you know, all this dust up about Elena Kagan and barring, was it Harvard or was it Yale or was it Princeton? I guess it was Princeton. I don't know. Where in the hell did she, where was it? Was it Yale? Harvard? I don't know. Who cares? But she didn't bar military recruiters. She said as long as the military discriminated against homosexuals and prevented them from serving because of their sexual orientation, she was not going to allow them on campus. Now, Jefferson T. Beauregard Sessions, you see, in the first place, he's got a Jewish female sitting in front of him who's also a Democrat. Well, there's three strikes right there. But she also happened to make a stand where it concerned discrimination, official discrimination against gay people. Well, that's strike four. Beauregard Sessions was sitting there just almost wetting his pants with glee. You ever notice Sessions? You ever watch him? Everything he says, if you say how old you are, he gives you that little boy look, that little boy grin. I'm 7 years old. How old are you? Ever watch him? Mushmouth, these mushmouth southern white males that wind up in the Senate, or the House for that matter, but especially the Senate. He's got that little old grin on his face.
Well, Ms. Kagan, I want to thank you for coming by to talk to me, and I think we had a real good talk, don't you? But on the other hand, is it true you're a dyke? Oh, am I not allowed to say that? Well, you are a Jew, right? I can tell you, female. You're a Democrat? Ooh, Lord have mercy. What did Mr. Obama put in front of us here? He's got that little bird dropping eating grin of his. How tall is Jeff Sessions? Isn't he about 5'2"? That's probably why he didn't have to go through all those twists and turns to get out of the military. They probably would have taken him. Boy, what do you want in this man's army? Well, I'm just here to say I was here. Ah! Man. Jeff Sessions. And every one of these Republicans who advocate war, again, I would just, or who deny veterans benefits, I would just suggest that they be put in combat gear and dropped into the middle of Mr. Bush and now Mr. Obama's war, and just see what happens. How long do you think they would last? About 10 minutes before they would run screaming, looking for somebody to take care of them? Oh, help! Help! Oh, my Lord, I'm not supposed to be here. I'm Beauregard T. Sessions Limbaugh, the 49th. I'm not supposed to be here. I'm supposed to be sending other people here. Somebody save me! Save me! We'll be right back.
Full of children fighting communism. I just gotta wonder what my daddy would have done if he'd seen the way they turned his dream around. I gotta go by what he told me. Gotta tell the truth and stand your ground. Don't let the bastards get you down.
Don't let the bastards get you down.
Conservatives, don't be afraid. Be very afraid. It's Mike Moore.
It's 21 past the hour. I got this email, I think 2 days ago, or no, I guess it was last week and I missed it. It's from Timber in Durham, North Carolina, who writes, Mike, I just listened to your reading excerpts from a Washington Post columnist pointing out the hypocrisy of the teabagger Taliban when it comes to attacking Obama's policies, even when they are virtually indistinguishable from George W. Bush's. Obviously, this is true, and I think people like Noam Chomsky are being naive in claiming that the teabaggers are sincerely concerned about the size and power of government, since they were silent on these issues while Bush was in office. By the same token, though, too many liberals and Democrats have muzzled themselves on issues like military spending, the Patriot Act, state terrorism being committed by special ops and covert government agencies, and our continued illegal occupation and oppression of Iraq and Afghanistan simply because it is a black Democrat who now implements these policies. I and other critics from the left of the Democratic Party warned that Obama would be used to legitimize and normalize, would be used to, I don't get the sentence. And I'd say we've been proven right, both in terms of his behavior and in terms of the lack of reaction from Democrats and mainstream liberals to his behavior. For callers with no political experience to argue that they are somehow less naive than Obama about how Washington works, or to claim that Obama is being threatened or intimidated by Fox News into taking these positions, is just evidence of the caller's denial of political realities. Obama knows what he's doing, and he's doing it of his own free will. The sooner we realize that and start looking for a genuine progressive to challenge him in the Democratic primary, the better. I wonder if there will be a challenge from the Democratic left to the Obama presidency. I seriously doubt it. I don't know who it would be. It'll be much fun to see which Republican piece of human waste decides to challenge Obama in 2012. It'll be very interesting to see. And again, the perverse side of me hopes that that Republican piece of human waste wins. And that various and sundry Republican pieces of human waste win control of the Senate and the House. And then we can get on with the total collapse of this society, this economy, this country. And after cleaning out some of the dead wood, then we can begin possibly in rebuilding a society based on justice. Or we can revert to eating sticks and rocks and killing each other for food. And I mean that literally, killing each other to be food. So let's see what happens. That's the Republican dream. Let's take some phone calls if you'd like to call in. The number here is 877-996-2556. Miss Catherine will release the lines so that we can hear what you've got to say. If you have something that you feel just has to be said, we invite your phone call. I didn't deliberately ignore the passing of Senator Robert Byrd. I just don't know, you know, what to say about it. I do know that he was a fiddler. I'm talking about his musical ability. I also know that he started out 1,000 years ago as a member of the KKK and went on to become a champion of human rights, which is proof that even the most obtuse racist can graduate. Well, not all of them. I mean, Beck can't, Limbaugh can't, Bortz can't, Palin can't, all these people who are members of the teabagger group of psychopaths can't. But Robert Byrd was able to do it. So just, you know, again, no offense in not intended in not mentioning his passing. Again, I just, you know, I don't know what to say. When Cheney dies, I'll know what to say. But Robert Byrd, I accept to acknowledge that he certainly had come a long way in his personal evolution. All right, we have a break coming here. We shall return and take some of your phone calls. So do stick around. All right, I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us.
a soothing bedtime lullaby. It's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. To your phone calls. Mike is in Chicago listening online. Hello, Mike.
Hey, Mike. Jeff Sessions, when you hear him speak, is it just me or does dual banjos from Deliverance go through your head and the pictures of fan boats in the Louisiana Bayou?
Oh, no, absolutely. I mean, Jeff, and plus, you've noticed, I'm sure you've noticed what I was talking about, that little boy grin he's got. That's the kind of grin you used to see on these addled, half-witted white people just before they lynched another Negro.
Like, you know, he also has that, like, he's got small eyes, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, he
you
does.
Know?
Yeah, he does.
But I think I know why the Republicans like the judicial nominee hearing so much. It's the only time they can tell someone who they perceive as liberal how they truly feel about them without the fear of having them having their asses handed to them.
Yeah, plus
they have to sit there and they have to take it, you know?
Yeah, plus the Republicans all make up crap. I've been listening a little bit of the Kagan hearing. My respect for her has gone up 1,000% for her to sit there and take this abuse from these right wingers without getting up, walking up to the table of senators and just smacking one of them right in the mouth. I mean, just hauling off and slapping the hell out of them and saying something like, "You're not going to talk to me like that, you pig."
Yeah, and you know what? I mean, think about their spinelessness. Do you think that any of them would have the guts to tell Obama to his face, "You're a socialist born in Kenya"?
No, of course.
Of course not.
Well, like I say, all Republicans, especially Republican office holders, are at baseline utter cowards.
Mm-hmm.
Complete cowards.
A final question I got for you, Mike. Why did no one in the House, when the bill came up to extend the unemployment, I saw the Republicans say it's going to add $38 billion onto debt. Why no one stood up and said, okay, why don't we just take it out of the war funding? Because that's literally about 6 months of war funding, money right there. And let's see them say that war is more important than the American people.
Ah, but it is. To the people,
have I mentioned how much I hate these people?
I know, me too. But to the people who make these decisions, of course war is more important. The Republicans, and apparently Obama feels about the same way. Obama could pull the plug on this. I know a lot of people, liberals, will disagree with that, but as far as I'm concerned, anybody, any commander-in-chief can order a complete stand down and then a withdrawal or retreat, whatever you want to call it. I mean, if they were able to do it after 8 years or 7 years in Vietnam, they can damn sure do it in Afghanistan.
Yeah.
Oh, well. All right. Thanks, Mike.
Well, Take care.
All right, sir. Appreciate you checking in. Al Babe, who sent this to me, this is very interesting. He writes, "It seems really weird to me that the conservatives have virtually no political platform, no stand on anything, nothing that they want the people to see. All they tout is vague and meaningless. They're corporatists, and they don't want their base, like the idiot teabaggers, to see that. So what's left? It seems all they can do is make up insane stuff like Obama being a Muslim, or in this case, Elena Kagan being a Saudi sympathizer, which is especially weird given all of the Bush family's connections to the Saudis. Is there a self-respecting conservative out there that doesn't believe that the Republican politicians are doing anything other than basically one thing? They're filibustering every single bill that the Democrats put forward in the hopes that it will make Obama look impotent. That's it. That's all they stand for. I guess I answer my own question. So, is there any such thing as a self-respecting Republican? So what do you think the possibilities of the Democrats rising up and telling the activist Republican ideologues to shut their pie hole? Yeah, me too. What he's got is, as Rachel Maddow noted, the media and the Republican establishment have been pretty quiet about Supreme Court nominee Elena Kagan lately, but that hasn't stopped some of the more extreme on the right from keeping up the attacks. Right Wing Watch has this, has an example of this. The pathetic desperation of the anti-Kagan campaign, to wit. Because the right has very little ammunition against Kagan heading into her confirmation hearings, they have been desperately trying to make up controversies that they can try to use against her, which is why a donation made by Saudi Prince Al-Walid bin Talal to Harvard University to establish an Islamic studies program at the time that Kagan was dean of Harvard Law School That has been transformed into a right-wing claim that Kagan supports Sharia law and the enemy, and she hates our troops. So I guess it was only a matter of time until we started seeing things like this in Frank Gaffney's column in the Washington Times. Quote, hats off to Senator Jeff Sessions. The top Republican on the Senate Judiciary Committee has opened up an important new front in the debate over Elena Kagan's fitness to serve on the Supreme Court, which is her attitude toward the repressive, legal, authoritative Islam the repressive legal code authoritative Islam calls Sharia and her enabling of efforts to insinuate it into this country. By doing so, the Alabama legislature, Jeff Sessions, has given his colleagues and the country an opportunity not only to flesh out and evaluate the thin public record of President Obama's second nominee to a lifetime appointment on the nation's highest court, but also afforded us all what Mr. Obama might call a teachable moment. Specifically, this Supreme Court nomination offers a prism for examining the concerted and ominous campaign underway to bring Sharia to America, thanks to the troubling role Ms. Kagan played during her tenure as dean of the Harvard Law School. End quote. The drunk Frank Gaffney. Unbelievable. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that if you have any doubts about how brain dead and vile Republicans, right wingers are, then you probably can't spell your own name without assistance from an older brother. Speaking on the Senate floor yesterday, Senate Judiciary Committee ranking member Jeff Sessions brought the debate over Supreme Court nominee Elena Kagan substantially closer to the gutter by invoking the dread specter of Islamic Sharia law. This is from Think Progress. Sessions ominously intoned, new information has come to light suggesting that Ms. Kagan may even have been less morally principled in her approach than has been portrayed. The idea that learning about Islamic faith and culture is in and of itself a form of indoctrination into extremism is a common trope on the goofball right. Oh, that's Think Progress saying. Unsurprisingly, WorldNet Daily is already touting the Sessions speech, likely soon to be followed by commentary, the Weekly Standard, National Review, and Frank Gaffney, claiming that Elena Kagan may still be a Muslim. I mean, these people are mad. They're insane. They're rat-eating, dung-swallowing freaks. And they're in our political system. I say let them have the entire political system. Give it to them so that everything will collapse. The retribution can begin. We can clear out the dead wood and start rebuilding a society based on justice. Ah, you think? Ah, wouldn't that be fun? Ah, lock and load, huh? Okay, show. Whatever you want to do. Ah. This is from vagabond8877@gmail.com. Senator Sessions is one of the few people in government who has the balls to stand up to this liberal lunacy. I know you hate Jews and Christians, but you would love Sharia law. You make me sick, you piece of hippie waste. You should become a Muslim. Perfect religion for you. Why don't you get little Molly circumcised? This is from vagabond8877@gmail.com. Nice work, Vagabond. Huh? Nice work. Why do you pick on a five-year-old child?
Big man.
What a big man, huh? You're a big, strong man, aren't you, you piece of human waste? Vagabond8877@gmail.com. You pick on a five-year-old child? Wow. Typical Republican, though. I have no doubt. He must listen to Rush Limbaugh all day, or maybe Glenn Beck. Let me give you that email again in case you want to send this guy a quick message. It is Vagabond, V-A-G-A-B-O-N-D, Vagabond8877@gmail.com. Why don't you get little Molly circumcised? Hey, what's that noise I hear? Sounds terrible. Some kind of rumbling going on here. Probably the whole system is... Oh, there it stopped. Thank you. Vagabond8877@gmail.com. Why don't you get little Molly circumcised? How's it make you feel, Mom?
Well, that's milder than the ones who want to see her raped or the ones that suggest she drink bleach or that, you know...
Aren't Republicans wonderful? Aren't these
conservatives... Go ahead and kill herself because of you.
Yeah. God, you sick bastards. See, again, when the lights go out, I will go looking for vagabond8877@gmail.com. It's very easy to find out where this piece of dreck lives. We'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Short to listen to right-wing radio, here's Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour, Kat Marion Memphis wants to comment here on Elena Kagan. She writes, as U.S. Solicitor General Kagan opposed the health and well-being of Americans by advocating for Monsanto, producer of environment-destroying so-called crops that contain disease-causing genetically modified organisms. Her office submitted a friend of the court brief arguing for Monsanto Corporation's appeal in Monsanto versus Geertsen Seed Farms. During her Senate confirmation hearings for Solicitor General, Kagan agreed with Republican Senator Lindsey Graham on the war on terror power of the presidency to indefinitely hold detainees as, quote, enemy combatants, end quote. In other words, she wants a unitary executive, also known as a dictator, which would unbalance the co-equality of the branches of government even more so than now. Moreover, during the mortgage crisis, Kagan was a paid advisor to Goldman Sachs. I don't like her. Kat Marion Memphis. Well, when you put it that way, Kat Marion, neither do I. I'm not a big fan of Kagan's at all. It's just that I'm a less of a fan of these right-wing trolls who sit on the Senate Judiciary Committee, acting as though they have something to say. Oh, well. Arthur is in Winnipeg. Hi, Arthur.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I'm good.
I'm really excited to talk to you, but I'm going to try and stay calm.
Okay.
I'm a huge fan of yours. And listen, I'm sorry about the things that people say about your daughter and your wife. It's terrible.
It's not necessarily terrible, but it's typical. This is what they do. There's no way these trolls can do anything to me. Face to face, I would probably smash them into a million pieces. But so they say bad things about a 5-year-old child.
I know.
It's very typical. This is what Republicans do. This is what conservatives do. And it's, you know, it just comes with the territory.
Terrible. Mike, I'm going to try to stay focused this time. Last time
okay.
I was all over the place. I spent 25 years in the Canadian Navy. I'm retired now. And, I just wanted to say that I admire your stance you've taken regarding the veterans. Just one other thing before I go on with this. I just want to tell you that I'm Jewish, and I think you're right on Israel. And my father, when they used to call him the bi-Israeli, call my mother and father bi-bonds. My mom and dad just say, oh, both for Israel. Sorry, we're not interested. Anyway, moving on. There was a guy who phoned you some months ago, a guy named Dan. an Iraq War veteran. I think he was from New York State. Do you remember him?
Not offhand, but what did he have to say? That
he had a great conversation with him. He obviously had some real issues, and he talked about some things. It sounded like it was the first time he talked about them in a while. And you told him he should phone you back so we could see how he was doing. He never called you back again.
Arthur?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, he never phoned you back, eh?
No, I don't think so. Oh, that's right, you're Canadian. He never phoned you back, eh? I didn't hear the A.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Arthur.
That's okay. I remember that conversation. It stuck with me. I know a guy here in Canada who suffers from post-traumatic stress disorder too. He's not the same guy. He did two tours in Bosnia, and he's not the same man anymore.
Right.
So any of the right wingers who phone in and, you know, who attack you about veterans' issues or think you're making it up, I can tell them because I've got pals that, you know, it's very real. And I think that's about all I'm going to say for now. I could go over the place, all sorts of things that I talked about, but I admire your stance, and I hope this fella Dan will call in sometime so we can hear about him. And listen, you and your wife and your daughter, you know, you guys will be thinking of you. And hey, you guys out there who want to go after Mike's family, leave them alone. You're awful people, and your place is not in the Molloy universe. You should go somewhere else.
Yay! Thank you, Arthur.
All the best to you.
All right, I appreciate it. Thanks, Arthur from Winnipeg. I appreciate it. No, this is what there's nothing that anybody can say. Republicans, right-wingers, people who listen to right-wing radio are all, they're so screwed up that you almost have to laugh at what they say. It's just that I can never understand some of the emails we get with the really vile stuff about a five-year-old kid. I realize what they're trying to do. They're trying to get to me. And I don't know. It's very typical. It's not a shock. It's not a surprise. I expect it. But it just cracks me up. In a way, I don't let it really upset me that much. I just file this stuff away. I trace these emails back until I get addresses, and then I put them in my little book. And when the lights go out, I have three or four people that I'm going to go visit. And probably kill, frankly. Just kidding. Oh, my goodness. Ah! Dot in Seattle. Mike, I'd be more than happy to circumcise Vagabond 8877 with a chainsaw and a blowtorch. No, I can't say that on the air. What a blank blank. Dot in Seattle. Thanks, Dot. Yeah, again, I understand where these people are coming from. They're very scared. They're terrified. They can't think. They can't reason. They have no position on anything. So they resort to attacking children, which is what they always do. But that's definitive. All right, we'll be back after this break. Stick around. We have another hour, and we will take your phone call. Stay with us. I'm Mike Molloy. back. It is 7 past the hour on the Malloy program and other places, too, believe it or not. Back to your phone calls. Tom is in Bullhead City, Arizona. Hey, Tom.
Yeah, hey, Mike. I was listening to you earlier.
Yeah.
About you wanted some kind of opinion from your audience, what was going on with Obama.
Sure, anytime. Yeah, what?
Yeah, well, you remember early on in his presidency, didn't you hear that little news blip about he got some kind of a note on his desk in the Oval Office left by George Bush, and it was never discussed what was said in that note or that letter? Did you ever hear anything about that?
I think I did, but not that I can remember.
Feeding little news blip. But the thing is, because I was a psychic hotline operator, okay, I want to disclose what I think was said in that note.
Okay, do it.
Basically, it said, "You are not the president. this country belongs to the corporations." In so many words, I'm sure it said that.
I would not be surprised. I really wouldn't. But that makes people like you and me, Tom, conspiracy theorists. It makes us out of the mainstream. Good, self-respecting liberals would say that you and I are crazy if we really believe that. But I wouldn't be the least bit surprised.
Yeah, I've gotten that from family members, but that's okay, Mike, because you know what? We're just not going to give up. We're not going to play anytime soon.
No, I certainly don't plan on it, and I doubt if you will. All right, thanks, Tom. I appreciate you checking in as always, pal. Dell is in Freeport, Illinois, listening on XM. Hey, Dell.
Hi there, Mike. What an amazing segue. speaking of corporation.
Yeah.
The Rockford Coffee Party just received our permit for the use of the pavilion in Cerny Park, right down 1 mile away from the North American corporate headquarters of BP America, where we are planning on a protest July 19th.
Wow. All right.
What we're hoping for now is to get together a decent lineup of speakers.
Mm-hmm.
And actually get bodies out there to join us in letting BP Incorporated know just how dissatisfied the American people are with their business practices.
Yeah, or dissatisfied with their existence.
I believe that this $20 billion, I don't know what phrase to use.
Escrow account.
Yeah, this $20 billion escrow account is at least 10 times too small.
Oh, there's no doubt.
If we settle for that minuscule amount, then we can honestly say that the country really doesn't belong to the people anymore.
Well, I don't think there's any doubt that the country doesn't belong to the people, but occasionally you have to toss the people a bone. And in this instance, the $20 billion, as my understanding, is just the initial payment. Although, don't hold your breath on seeing that come to fruition. I think the way they're supposed to do it is, $5 billion a year for the next 4 years or something. I mean, the whole thing is just vile and
yes, sir.
Invokes feelings of violence in me. I can imagine, or I can't imagine, how those people on the Gulf Coast feel. You know, one day they're living their lives like normal human beings. They're doing they're running their businesses, whatever those businesses are. The next day they're being told by a predatory corporation that their lives are now finished.
I want to leave your listeners with one thought. If a shrimp boat fisherman or a tourist boat operator is given a $20,000 settlement by British Petroleum and an additional $2,000 every year for the rest of his or her life,
mm-hmm.
and they still lose their boat and they still lose their house,
right?
and the corporate CEO and the CFO and all the other three-letter SOBs from BP are still sipping their champagne on board their yacht. Has justice been served?
No, of course not. And I'll tell you something else, Dell. You know, at some point, I don't know when it's going to happen, but there is a tipping point to all this. I've been talking about the tipping point for 2 years. I thought we would have hit it by now, but apparently we haven't. But there is a tipping point where the predations that are visited upon the American working class by the corporations, the capitalists, the right wingers, the conservatives, that tipping point is going to hit. And when it does, this country is going to explode. I don't have any doubt in my mind that it's on the horizon. I don't know, just because it's on the horizon doesn't necessarily mean it'll happen. Maybe at some point, cooler heads will prevail. The removal from the air of these right-wing thugs that are nothing more than America haters. They're trying to foment violence. They're doing a pretty good job of it. And I hope at some point we can avoid the violence that is just hanging out there. You don't spend 8 years, as we did under Cheney and Bush, destroying everything, destroying the country, and then having a new president arrives who refuses to bring any sort of justice to the people who destroyed the nation for 8 years. And then you have corporate predator after corporate predator, Wall Street, Main Street, E Street, whatever the hell street it is. And then the Gulf of Mexico just continuing to slash and cut and gouge and destroy American families, American life. I think anybody with more than a seventh grade education understands that that's what capitalism does. It is a destructive, violent, social, economic system that offers no quarter to anybody. It's predatory. It's a kind of an economic Darwinism of the worst kind. And eventually, people are going to say, okay, that's enough. And when that occurs, there is going to be an upheaval in this country that I don't know if we'll be able to recover from. I hope so. But as surely as right-wingers are mad, drooling, insane thugs, that possibility, and it may be a probability at this point, is just lurking out there. You don't destroy, as the Republicans, the conservatives have, you don't destroy everything in this country and expect to get away from it. Ask the Jacobins. Check out what happened after the French Revolution, the so-called Reign of Terror. So we are not above that, doing that again. I don't think any society is above that. Pushed to the point where survival is at stake, family cohesion is at stake. There comes a point where the people will rise up against these right-wing maniacs and end them. I honestly believe that. We'll be right back.
Does unsuffer rivals.
truth seekers, it's time for your humble and obedient servant, Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. James is in El Cervante, California, listening on Green 960. Hey, James.
Hi, Don. Good evening.
I'm all right. How are you?
Good, thanks. All right. I guess I kind of misread some of the newspaper articles as I was walking past the newspaper stands on the roof today. But there were some spies, Russian spies, arrested shortly after Medvedev was here.
Right.
And, of course, you know, my paranoid mind immediately kicks in and starts thinking, well, maybe this has something to do with, you know, the fact that Russia was actually, has been one of the better friends of Iran what do they call that big global government thing? Oh, yeah, the United Nations. Yeah, sorry. Put on that for a second. They look like some pretty low-level folks. I don't know what they were really doing here, but, it's kind of funny, actually, when you read the article about these spies. It's like they thought that home ownership was something that was, quote-unquote, like an American value or something, and so they tried to get their bosses back in Russia to buy them a house. So I don't know. I mean...
I think the whole thing is just... it's some kind of weird theater. It's almost like... Dada style art or something, Dadaism or whatever the hell the right term is. It's funny, you know. Here are all these Russian people living in various little enclaves, and I don't know what they were supposed to, what kind of information they were supposed to gather, but whatever they gathered could be found on the internet. And then all of a sudden, when Russia starts to put pressure on countries that had agreed to give Israel access to their airspace so they, Israel could launch an attack on Iran, when that was rescinded, all of a sudden, we bust 10 or 11 or 12, whatever it is, so-called Russian spies. There's a big game going on, James, that you and I will never, ever, 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 fully understand or even partly understand. It's so beyond you and me. And, the entertainment here on the ground is to watch the right wingers scream about, deficits or something. Watch the teabaggers jump around and tell the government to keep their hands off Medicare. And, you know, crazy people. We have crazy people who provide the entertainment. Glenn Beck, Rush Limbaugh. That's what they're paid to do. That's why they're paid enormous amounts of money to keep us, to keep most Americans diverted, or Americans, at least a good chunk of America, diverted away from, completely away from reality. And, but what is really going on, the big game, the game that, that carves up, the planet and its resources and the money, that's so far beyond you and me that, we might as well be talking about something that happened in ancient Mesopotamia. We don't have a clue, James, not a clue.
Well, see, then, so as far as you're talking about, though, all that stuff about, you know, how people are going to finally have enough, I mean, how are people going to know who, you know, the enemy is, or what, if we don't know what's really going on? I have a feeling that at some level, like people, like I was talking about my friend at work today, and I was like, hey, you remember that time where they said that there was an accidental keystroke on a keyboard or something, and it caused like a 2-day total collapse of the stock market? And it was all, mm-hmm. we both know, you know, like there's that example and there's other examples where there's the official story, and we're all told that we have to believe it, you know, like there were, you know, but at some other level, people are sort of fooling themselves, and yet they still know that they're fooling themselves. So there's sort of like this sort of dark undertone of like some brooding thing that's about to happen or whatever, but maybe it's really just going to be a very controlled sort of gradual transformation to where like everything that we deal with as far as trying to grasp these problems, as far as like, well, can I go to the
let me interrupt because we're about out of time. I think there was a gradual controlled effort going on. It started with the Reagan years. It went through Pappy Bush. It went through Clinton. And then George Bush and his band of psychopaths come on board, and they just decide to take the reins off every predatory capitalist in America, and the result was everything started to collapse. Don't forget when Bush 2 and his dog Cheney, or I've got that reversed, were unleashed on America. The country had budget surpluses as far ahead as the eye could see. We had budget deficits. We had all kinds of things that were going on. Well, it didn't take Cheney and Bush long to destroy that and to tell corporate America, go ahead, chomp your teeth into the corpse, because that's what it is, a corpse. So with that kind of acceleration, the idea of a gradual switch from representative government into corporatism, all of a sudden it took on warp speed, and that's where we are now. And I think we'll have no problem identifying the enemy. The enemy is anybody in this country who ever, ever professed to be a conservative or a Republican. We'll be right back.
Here's the truth speaker, Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. We have one open line here if you want to join in, 877-996-2556. Tom is calling from Joshua Tree, California. Hey, Tom.
Hey, Mike. I'm getting an echo.
Oh, you are? Well, nothing happening here. You're coming through loud and clear.
Okay, good. I was thinking of doing a commercial called Adopt a Vet, you know?
Adopt a Pet?
Yeah.
Only it would be Adopt a Vet.
Yeah. And we could say, now here's this young man who came from a nice middle class family that doesn't exist anymore and had no options, so he joined the military to fight a foe that wasn't his own. And now he ain't got no guts. So, could you please open up your heart and your home so this man can afford to live by somebody feeding him and emptying his pouch?
Mm.
I mean, these people, they send all these young men to die, their lie, and then they ignore them because they don't want to face the truth of their own stupidity.
Yeah, that's so true.
And I was just thinking that if I was the director of a movie and I took into account the fact that the Russian Revolution began with the military mutinied, and let's just say, for example, in this movie that enough people began asking the question, who in the hell's the enemy here?
Mm-hmm.
Who's killing us?
Mm-hmm.
And what are we dying for? And they said, yeah, screw this, man. We got enough people on our side. We'll just take these aircraft carriers into port, and we'll have a music festival with all the people there. And anybody that stops us will fucking shish kebab.
No.
Oh, I got to go.
yeah, I can't. I'm sorry, Tom. You got to be cool, man. It's okay to say that, you know, to use that language when you send me an email, but not when we're on the air. But that's all right. I get your point. And I completely agree. But I also, you know, this program is independent of any kind of corporate stranglehold. I still have to work through the corporate web to get the program out. And that corporate web says, you know, we can report on the slaughter of children in Afghanistan, but you can't say the F word. Go figure. We can talk about death and destruction in this country of the coastal United States, southern coast. We can talk about the thievery and greed and filth of capitalist corporate America, but we can't say the F word on the radio. So, I get your point, Tom. Mark is in San Francisco listening on Green 960. Hello, Mark.
Hi, Mike. How you doing?
I'm all right.
I have a question for you. Haven't we reached the tipping point with the refusal to extend unemployment and the apology to BP?
You'd think, but, you know, we're talking about people who have, people, that would be us, who have this learned helplessness. We've talked about this. When you're convinced that nothing you can do will bring about change, because the one thing you've tried over and over again, which is voting, has not brought about any change, one starts to think, well, there's nothing else I can do. I think we're going to get over it.
Yeah, Mike, because to me, if this doesn't show people what the Republican Party stands for, nothing will. And I just can't see for the life of me how any American with a decent mind on his shoulders can vote Republican. It's just pure insanity.
It is.
It really is. Yeah. And, you know, Mike, I don't know if we're going to be eaten out of dumpsters before, you know, we start taking these people apart. But I would hope that we would vote them out and send a message to them that we've had enough. And if that doesn't work, then, of course, you know, we're going to have to do what we have to do. But I would hope that people would see that we need to vote all these Republicans out of office. I'm not saying Democrats are good, but this ideology has to be destroyed. This 30 years of Reaganomics and deregulation and what's destroying this country. I mean, they may as well take this Republican Party, send them to North Korea. Let them go over there. They'll do more damage than any atomic bomb.
Yeah, boy, is that the truth.
Anyway, Mike, I love you, and I love Tom Hartman. You guys are great.
Well, thanks. Thanks for the kind words, Mark. I appreciate it. Take care. Take care. Yeah, if we haven't, you know, his point is obvious. What is a tipping point? I mean, what does it take? I started saying 3 or 4 years ago that have we not reached the tipping point yet? And obviously we had not. But my God, when it's one thing to shred the Constitution with preventive detention and doing away with Miranda rights now unless you ask for them, turning the country into one that sanctions and blesses and advocates torture, turning the country into an obviously aggressive behemoth that storms around the planet destroying anything in its place. I say obviously because we've been doing it for 100 and some years, but, you know, once it becomes obvious, once nobody makes a pretense anymore, we're not fighting communism, what are we doing? Oh, that's right, we're fighting terrorism. You know, the largest engine of terrorism in the history of the human race, us, are fighting terrorism? Please. Now, you say that to the average teabagger, and, you know, his eyes glaze over and little flags pop out of his forehead, and you start hearing ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta in the background. He doesn't have a clue. When you say the United States has involved itself in global terrorism for the past century, you know, the average teabagger, like I said, has no idea what you're talking about. All he knows is his chimes have just been rung. Well, you tell me, you bagger freaks. Overthrowing governments, destabilizing currencies, destroying other countries, burning them all to death, dumping Agent Orange, depleted uranium, killing people, slaughtering people, innocent people. What do you call that, you freaks? Yeah, I know. To Republicans, it's just another day in corporate America. But not everybody feels that way. So the tipping point, there may not be one. You know what I'm saying? There just may not be a tipping point. What's a tipping point for people who have learned to just sit back and continue to take it? And when they're not doing that, they're putting on little cute camo outfits and running around in the forest going, oh, let's shoot something, bang, bang, bang. Or they're tuning in to clown shows like this disgusting Beck or Limbaugh or Hannity or the rest of these morons. I mean, once you get to that point, once the society gets to the point where you have thugs like those three I just mentioned, and you can throw in Borch, you can throw in Savage, you can throw the rest of these monsters in. But once you get to the point in a society where people actually watch or listen to that, add the Fox Channel, all of this stuff, once you get to that point, you've lost even a tenuous grip on reality. And you have become exactly what the right-wingers want you to be, the corporatists, what the capitalists want you to be. And that is utterly passive, utterly unable to move, utterly unable to do anything. And then along comes a corporate predator like BP that destroys the Gulf Coast of the United States. What happens next? That's anybody's guess. This may be the triggering event. You know, at one time it was the assassination of Archduke Ferdinand. Another time it was the invasion of Poland. You never know. Another time it was a lie about the Gulf of Tonkin. Another time it was the North Koreans crossing the 38th parallel. You never know what's going to set it off this time, do you? But I will tell you what. I have a feeling as deep inside of me as I can possibly go that when the tipping point is reached, there's going to be a cleansing in this country. And, that cleansing is going to pay an awful lot of attention to the people who have been disrupting and destroying the country for the past 35 or 40 years. And I'm not talking about pot smoking hippies. You know what I'm talking about. You know exactly what I'm talking about. So, we'll see. All right, we have a break coming up here rapidly, so let's do that, and then we shall come back and take your phone calls. And although it is late into the program, we still have an open line if you want to get in here real quick. 887-996-2556. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Susan is in Squim, Washington. Hey, Susan.
Hi, Mike. How are you tonight?
She's great. How are you?
Good. Say, you were talking about breaking points, and it was pretty interesting. You know, when will America have had enough?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know where I was seeing this. Maybe it was Hartman. He's kind of brainy. But there's been actually some studies done upon when people revolt. And the thing is, if they go too far beyond their breaking point, if they become so beaten down that they have no hope left, they don't revolt. They get like the people in Darfur and just kind of glaze over and wait to die.
Mm-hmm.
So the people that revolt are the ones that feel they have some hope. So I think that's interesting. I know in the last election, many of us felt we had some newfound hope, and we were energized by that. So I kind of understand where the psychology of that is coming from. But now that we've had it dashed in our faces, I don't know. I don't think we're beyond the no hope point, but everything you're saying, I agree with. It's going to get very interesting out.
You know, some, I agree with what you're saying, but I also think that sometimes a lack of hope indicates that people are primed for just about any kind of action or reaction that we can imagine. And I think history is littered with the corpses of leaders, whether they were kings or prime ministers or presidents or dictators, littered with the corpses of these people and others who refuse to understand that a society will not exist without hope. And if it's denied hope, then the reaction is always violence.
Right. And also, sometimes people, when they try to manipulate others, like the right wing is doing with this teabag crowd, sometimes it gets away from them and it gets beyond their control. I thought it was pretty evident in the last election when the Republican Party, and John McCain lost control of Sarah Palin.
Yeah, right.
but I mean, in many ways, that kind of was a precursor of what eventually happened with the teabag crowd.
Mm-hmm.
And, the problem with these gun packing idiots is there's something that they're unaware of. The extreme left, all these gun laws that they're relaxing so that people can practically have howitzers on their front yard.
Right.
We have access to them, too. And we know how to shoot. We know how to shoot.
Oh, my God. All right. Now you understand.
First time I ever picked up a gun, I was 5 years old.
Right. Well, you understand what I'm talking about.
I do understand what you're talking about.
And again, I wish some of these militia types on the right or these right wingers would just go to any history book online and look up Jacobins, and look what happened as a result of the French Revolution. I mean, the very people who led that revolution eventually felt the blade, went to the guillotine. I mean, that went on for what, 2 years?
Yes, it did. But they won't look, Mike, because they can't read.
True.
And you know, like some of these people that are running for office, like that Ellen, what's her name, in Nevada.
Engel, I think.
Engel. And he keeps talking about the Second Amendment solutions. Well, you know what? The implements for those Second Amendment solutions, we got them.
Yeah.
We got them. Amendment solutions.
When you get arrogant and decide that you can ride on the back of a tiger, you can for a while, and then eventually the tiger gets hungry. And God help you if you get off, and God help you if you stay on.
You got it, Mike. But you just keep them honest.
I'll do my damnedest. Thanks, Susan.
Good night.
I appreciate you checking in. Yeah, I just wish that every conservative in the country, especially these thugs like Beck, would. I mean, okay, they got their clown act going, and they're ripping off the families of dead soldiers, and they're ripping off children and poor people, and this is what right-wingers always do. But I wish they would take a look, and they're pushing and pushing and pushing for confrontation. Black against white, gay against straight, conservative against liberal. This is what they're pushing. And they may succeed, but I wish that they would just do a little history of the French Revolution
and what occurred after, and how long it went on, and who went to the guillotine, and how many heads rolled in the streets of Paris and just about any place else where the executioner's song was being sung. And understand that you can play games with this stuff up to a point. And then the monster turns on you. And in so many instances in history, the first people to be devoured by the monster are the ones that created it. So continue playing your games, Beck. Continue playing your games, Savage, and you little freaks that send me the nasty emails. But I'll tell you what. Be careful what you wish for. You just might get it. Right? I'll see you tomorrow night. Oh, I'm off Thursday. What's tomorrow? Wednesday? Yeah, I'm taking Thursday off. But I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.